is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist from Real Liberty Media. This is a great time to download a bunch of podcasts and kick back in the sunshine of the waning summer season and just binge listen to your favorite shows. There's a lot of shows there on Real Liberty Media, a lot of podcasts that you can download. You can just listen live to Real Liberty Media right on site there. It's a great time just to catch up, you know. Listen to shows like Free Your Mind, It's All Connected, Hal Anthony, Behind the Woodshed, and of course me, the Redneck Dentist. Hope to see you there. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Welcome Saturday, September 11th, 2021. And I'm glad to be here. Always glad to be on Real Liberty Media doing something. Hopefully have a fun show for you today, or interesting at the very least. I wanted to cover a couple brief topics right off the bat. One is... Actually, I want to make a correction first and foremost. Last week, I talked about a medical doctor here in town. Looks like, I talked about a medical doctor here in town who would be penalized occasionally, or he was telling me that he ended up getting the jab because of a penalty that he would have to pay if he didn't. And I found out the real story. This is I said last week that he would be penalized per patient, and that's not quite the case. Here's what the true story is. I actually saw him myself, talked to him face to face, and we had this little discussion. So he told me that Oregon, OSHA, hang on one sec. Okay, Oregon OSHA would charge him $500 per day per staff member that was not jabbed. And that would be, in his case, $1,000 a day, 5 days a week, $5,000 a week, $20,000 a month. And that little practice in little areas like this, it's not happening. We can't do that. None of us can. I know we all think that, you know, medical doctors are rich, and I'm sure, you know, definitely not suffering, but you can't afford to pay that kind of money. Anyway, so that correction, because last week I said it was per patient, and it's not. It's actually per staff member. So moving on, that correction having been done, I wanted to talk about college football because, you know, even with all the crap going on in the world and tyranny taking over everywhere, I still like to enjoy some of the simple pleasures in life, like my RC cars and my flying the drone and playing with audio here, trying to learn all this stuff. And so it is college football season, and my apologies go out to the Ohio State Buckeyes because my alma mater, University of Oregon here in Eugene, gave them a little bit of a beatdown today. Number 3, Ohio State falls to University of Oregon Ducks. How about that? That was unbelievable. I kept waiting for the wheels to fall off, honestly. Always kind of thinking that there was going to be that there was going to be some kind of an error. Kind of hope you guys aren't hearing that. I made a mistake. I didn't turn my music off, and I wasn't listening to it. So hopefully you weren't hearing that the whole time. But it doesn't matter. Even if you did, it was really low. So it's just a little background. See, still learning the audio stuff. As I've said before, I'm going to start posting stuff on other venues, let's say, but it'll all always be Real Liberty Media getting the credit for whatever I'm doing so we can drive traffic back here. Let's see what else we got going. Okay, I got the correction done, got college football. Yeah, with tyranny on full throttle, that's no kidding, man. The stories that I keep hearing, not only from, you know, here, the United States, but Australia and other places, it is freaking crazy. And thank God for people who are standing up to it. Some governors, you know, some leaders in other parts of the world who are just saying, no, we're not doing this anymore. And, you know, pulling the plug on the whole operation. I mean, thank God for people like that. I don't know how long it's going to go on. I don't know how far this is going to go. But, man, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it continues on. I couldn't believe that Biden kind of reached out this week, really overextended. And I think there's more coming. I mean, it's just a matter of time. As a matter of fact, let me just play you this. Let me play you this sound bite from Jen Psaki that I heard this week. And I don't know if you guys will hear the same thing I heard, but let's just play this and see. Oh, let me bring the volume up so we can actually hear it. That would be good. Hopefully, it won't blow your ears out. And here is Jen Psaki, the press secretary of President Biden.
Let me just give you kind of some top lines here. I know we put out to all of you kind of the six prongs of what he will be announcing this afternoon. The overarching objective here is for the president to lay out the next steps, to build on the steps we've taken since he took office and a number of steps we announced over the summer. And the federal mandate for workers is an example of that. We obviously had done that with a series of agencies, the VA, DOD, NIH. We had announced steps on attestation. This is the next step in that process. But our overarching objective here is to reduce the number of unvaccinated Americans. There are, of course, 80 million unvaccinated Americans at this point in time. We want to reduce that number, decrease hospitalizations.
Okay. So did you hear what she said? She didn't say that our, you know, overarching objective was to reduce this disease or reduce the numbers or to make the country healthier. She said our overarching objective is to get everybody vaccinated, basically, is what she said. And that really hit home for me because, you know, well, as many of us have known from a long time ago, it's not about the disease. It's all about the jab. That's all. Their overarching objective is to make sure that all Americans are jabbed. You know, and if they can't do it, apparently they weren't happy enough with it, with the volunteer, you know, people volunteering to get the jab, they're going to force it on you one way or another. Now they're going to make it so that you can't work unless you have the jab. They are putting mandates in place that are unconstitutional, but it doesn't matter because as we've seen before in prior administrations, you can do something and get away with it until the courts overturn it. And that takes a while. So, you know, some damage is going to be done one way or another. You know, and who knows how far down deep in the pit we're going to go before that happens. It was pretty, I mean, and that was just a small bit of the news that came out of press conferences this week, but I'm certainly not going to get into a bunch of them. I do want to cover some news stories today, but I am hoping at some point we're going to have some special guests on the show today. Oh, hey, I should kind of let you guys know this too. I have a wedding to go to. So when the show is done, I'm going to be out of here like rapidly to get to this wedding. It's an outside venue. It's on a nice ranch locally. But my point is the audio and the blog post show notes won't be up until, well, either later tonight or tomorrow sometime. Just so you know. Okay, so let me see if I covered all the small stuff. Tyranny. The small stuff. And by the way, I just want to thank you guys who are in the chat room on Real Liberty Media. And if you're listening to this show either live or listening to the podcast, you can always go to Real Liberty Media and download old shows or download podcasts and listen to them or just listen live. There's always something playing on there. No, I won't be dancing. I could. I get, well, it's not video though. It's just audio. So, what was I saying? Oh yeah, listen to podcasts, you know, catch up on some old shows, see what we're all about over there. There's a bunch of different shows to choose from. Some that are very educational, some that are real fun. There's music usually, playing, on Sundays. I'm stumbling on that because I haven't listened for a few Sundays and I'm not 100% sure that the same shows are still on Sundays. But, you know, check it out. Come and, you know, spend some time. And that's what I was getting to is if you listen live or if you go to reallibertymedia.com, reallibertymedia.com, you can go in a chat room, fire up any show, or just get in the chat room and you can chat with us. We'll be here. There's pretty much always somebody in the chat room. So, and it's a pretty fun place to hang out and get great information. People post stuff in there all the time about what's going on in the world around them. So you kind of are constantly being kept up to date on, you know, either other countries that are overreaching with their, you know, tyrannical hooked arms or places that are dropping this whole COVID dance and going back to life as normal. You know, last week I was talking about how many people actually have died from COVID or the PSYOP currently in place. And it was 5 million people. And after I got done, I was like, that just can't be correct. So I went back and looked at the numbers. And sure enough, it's 5 million. It's not even, well, maybe now it is 5 million because it was really close before. Like it was 4,900,000 or something like that. And Yeah, but it did cure the seasonal flu. That's no kidding. So actually, this week I went back in. I went and looked at how many people die annually in the entire world. And it's like 50 million, maybe 55 million. So I can see how somebody's try and make it seem like such a disaster. But as I pointed out last week, it's 0.06%. of the world population has died from whatever this is, whatever disease entity this is. That's really not a very big number. I mean, I don't mean to sound cold and heartless. It's just not a very big number. And especially it's not an accurate number, so you know it's far less than 5 million people that actually died from COVID. As I pointed out last week, the guy from Oregon, it was just one simple example of a guy who did not have COVID but was counted as a COVID death. And I can't say for sure if once they correct that, do they actually go back and subtract that number out? I mean, my thinking is they probably don't because it was already counted. And they're just like, oh, it's just one case. We're not going to take it. It's not going to make that much difference. We know it's going to be a long time before the truth is ever known about this. And by the way, I watched a few videos this week from some medical doctors who are speaking up. One guy in particular, I don't have his name right now because I didn't really think I was going to reference this, but what made me start thinking about these people who are considered anti-vaxxers or spreading false information is this. Do people really think that other people, professionals, are just getting on, you know, podcasts, getting on streams, going on YouTube just to spread false information? Unfortunately, the answer to that question is probably yeah. Probably a huge percentage of the population who's listening to these days to their little podcasts and, you know, getting their information strictly from the internet or even the mainstream media for that matter, they haven't been taught to think for themselves. They haven't been taught to be critical about what they hear. So if you think about that, it actually wouldn't matter if these social media giants who are censoring pretty much everything, it wouldn't really matter if they just let that information go through anyway, because so many people are just, you know, just hear what they want to hear and that's what they believe. But it does make it, I guess, a little easier if they don't ever hear the other side. But one of the docs this week was talking about ivermectin, and he was talking about steroids, and he was talking about anticoagulants. And actually, that guy's video is not banned, which really surprised me. And it's on YouTube. But of course, I think it came out after the federal government said, yeah, you can use this stuff as kind of adjunct treatment. But listening to this guy and knowing that he's from Baylor, I think, medical school. I don't know if he's from Baylor, Texas A&M or somewhere. But, I mean, the guy's a professional. He's a medical doctor, a cardiologist. And he wouldn't just get online and give an interview or give his testimony. He actually testified in front of the Texas Congress Congress. And he really kind of laid it out like, hey, we as medical doctors have dropped the ball on this one because, you know, we've allowed ourselves basically to be pushed around and practice medicine the way somebody who doesn't practice medicine is telling us to. But he was very matter of fact about the things that he was doing and how they were helping. So whether you believe it's a coronavirus, COVID-19, or, you know, the flu or whatever, the guy has been able to make people a lot more comfortable with the treatments that he's been able to provide. And I'm not saying anecdotally made them better. I'm saying clinically, with clinical data to back up what he has done. He's published papers on it already. I mean, this whole worldwide lockdown has only been going on for, 2 years? And he's published 2 papers on the treatments that he's been able to give people. Oh, I wanted to tell you something else that this other doc told me, the one that I met face to face. And I guess I heard this before, but I didn't really understand exactly what was going on. But here's what he told me. He said hospitals are being paid by the federal government $34,000 per case that they diagnose as being COVID-19. So if you go into the ER with a sprained ankle and you're sniffling or you have a cough or whatever, because they don't actually need to have a positive test, although they've made that testing weigh heavily in favor of testing positive, because if you have any coronavirus in your body or antibodies in your body, you are going to test positive for COVID. but it's not even required. Doctors in the ER can say that you're a COVID patient without a test, just by your symptoms. And by doing so, they will receive $34,000 per case that they claim is a COVID case. Yeah, I don't know if it was on mainstream media or not. That's an interesting way to go about getting extra money coming in. I guess that's why we need these trillions of dollars so all these cases could be paid for. But just think about this for a minute also. So the federal government, who wants the population to be terrified enough to go get this jab, is paying people to pad the numbers so that everybody thinks this is far worse than it is. So it's pretty much a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, if you're paying somebody to make a diagnosis, whether you have a positive actual test, a real test, which I don't know if there even is one right now, or if you just say that somebody is positive for COVID-19, you're going to get $34,000. I mean, who doesn't want $34,000? Now, I don't know if those hospitals are turning those back in to be, I don't know if those doctors are being paid extra for making those diagnoses. It wouldn't surprise me a bit if there was some kind of a bonus in there for them, but I like to think that those people, you know, peers in healthcare, to me, I consider them peers. I know there's, you know, bad apples in every single profession in the world, but I would hope that they would have integrity enough to not do that. I would hope that, you know, they would make enough money just being an ER doc or a hospital doc that they would not, you know, be dependent on a bonus by calling somebody a COVID case if they're not. You know, I got to tell you the truth. This is kind of crazy too. This kind of always makes me question what's going on. And I actually was kind of having one of those times lately where I was thinking, I wonder if they didn't do that because I'm a dentist. You know, most medical doctors think that dentists are idiots. Nah, kind of. I mean, most of them, you know, we're like the redheaded stepchildren of the medical community, I guess. But, so I think I was in the hospital, I want to say three times, which is really horrible, but in the last year and a half. So since, okay, I'm going to go through them one at a time real quick, just so I can put them in perspective myself. So in May of last year, 2020, right before they were going to let us go back to work, I had that diverticulitis with a small perforation that made me extremely sick instantly. And I ended up going to the hospital for that. Luckily, was just there 24 hours and IV antibiotics, and they sent me home, and I recovered in a week, and I've had no issues since. Okay, so that's one. Then I had a transient ischemic attack at work one day, sometime after that, because I had an altered state of consciousness, I didn't pass out, but something was going on. I had my staff call 911, and I went off to the hospital for that. And then a few months ago, you'll remember I talked on this show about raking my arm across an upholstery freaking rail that sliced me open almost to the bone, and I was in the ER for that. So at least those three times, I went to the ER. Guess what? Not one time was I tested for COVID. Not one time. out of those three times. I've had a chronic cough since March of 2020, since March of 2020, because I remember distinctly when this whole thing started, and right before we actually got sent home from work to not return for a while, lockdown, I guess you call it, I had a cough. And I told my wife, I go, oh, great, I have COVID. I mean, that was before we knew anything, but I was like, I had this damn cough, and, you know, I hadn't had it before, and here's COVID, and I'm like, oh, I got COVID, great. Well, that cough has persisted since then, and I've had it checked. I went to respiratory, what do they call them, the respiratory, I was going to say, oh, crap, I'll think of it in a minute. But anyway, I went to the respiratory doc. They couldn't find anything. You know, I've had my heart echoed, my carotids echoed, and my, you know, and x-ray, everything. There's nothing. There's no reason I have this cough, but I have this cough. Maybe it's allergies. I don't know. But how about that? So three trips to the ER, told them straight up from the beginning that I had this cough. But, you know, I've had it, whatever, it's not a fever, it's not, you know, no runny nose, no nothing, just a cough. Well, never tested for COVID, three trips to the ER in the past, 18 months, whatever, was last May. It was like a year, and yeah, it's like, I don't know, 16 months or something like that. Drink time, hang on. So anyway... So I was kind of wondering, did they just not test me because I was a dentist? Like, did they think maybe, like, I might question that diagnosis? Or I don't know. It's just so strange to me because everybody else who, you know, I have a population of patients that some of them are older and some of them are younger. And, you know, all of them have issues of one kind or another. And, you know, they tell me that they get tested for COVID, you know, that they went to the hospital, you know, and not because they were sick, but because of other things like pregnancy or hip replacement or, you know, whatever. And they got tested. And I was just like, man, that was so crazy. I was in the hospital like three times and I never got tested for COVID. Like, you know, they didn't tell me they were testing me for COVID. It didn't show up on a bill anywhere that I was tested for COVID, like as far, and nobody said you were positive or negative for COVID. Just kind of strange. I don't know. Pretty strange. Oh, man. So all of that stuff is not even on the list of crap I was going to talk about today. But something else that I wanted to say about what Jen Psaki said, you know, and she speaks for the president. But it was funny that she actually said we want to get, you know, we want to get these other 80 million Americans vaccinated, you know, and we want to keep our economy strong. And it was just like, man, are you completely out of touch? The economy is freaking horrible. Inflation is like out of control, and it's only going to get worse. So I don't know what you mean by keep our economy strong. If this is your idea of strong, we're in big trouble. Which kind of brings me to one story I had in my list of stuff that I wanted to talk about today. And I literally laughed out loud when I read this. It said the U.S. economy added about 235,000 new jobs in August, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics released on Friday, but this was, I think, a week before last, falling far short of economists' expectations of around 728,000 new jobs. I'm sorry. I can't. I have no idea which economists were expecting 728,000 new jobs. I mean, you know, like basically on a month-to-month basis, so let's say this is September, so August, so July. So in July, some economists were sitting around, and they were like, yeah, next month in August, there's going to be 728,000 new jobs created. You know, and nobody laughed at them. Like nobody questioned them right at that minute. Like nobody said to these economists, hey, yeah, it's really not looking like there's any reason for anybody to get up off their ass and go to work next month. So I don't know where you're getting 728,000 new jobs. But no, we don't see that happening. It says, and of course, continued spread of the Delta variant of coronavirus has hindered some economic growth, economists told Wall Street Journal. Overall, around 5.3 million fewer people were employed as of August than in February of 2020 before the coronavirus pandemic caused widespread business shutdowns. The U.S. economy has seen high levels of inflation, with consumer prices rising 5.4% in July 2021 over the same month in 2020. Supply shocks have also disrupted certain sectors, such as the shortage of semiconductor chips that has caused automaker GM to temporarily shut down factories. So, of course, all of this is because of Corona, not because of, you know, just shutting down a million jobs in the coal fields and in the pipelines, you know, and those kind of policies. But somehow some economists in July of 2021 thought that they were going to make that there was going to be 728,000 new jobs in August. Now, here we are in September. I wonder what their prediction was for September, which kind of reminds me. So a lot of schools aren't even able to get the students back to school because they don't have enough bus drivers. It's crazy. There's not enough bus drivers. There aren't enough people willing to go take on a bus driving job. And I don't know why they would. Freaking kids are annoying. Oh, I shouldn't say that because I have my grandkids here today. They're awesome. But you know what I mean. You get a bus full of like junior high school kids. Oh, forget it. And trust me, I'm speaking from experience. I did drive a school bus back in 1988, right after I graduated from dental school and I was waiting for the results of the dental board. You know, I had to go to work. It was time to start paying the bills. And, you know, that was something that was available. And I was thinking at the time, hey, you know, I think it'd be kind of fun to drive a big old school bus. And driving a school bus was pretty fun. But having to have kids on it, that wasn't so fun. You know, luckily, the crazy thing is, like, think about this. So, you don't have a full school bus until your last stop. So it's kind of slowly the volume level and the activity level slowly increases at each stop until you finally have this bus full. And then it kind of gets almost out of control and you stop and dump them off at school. Now, at the end of the day, kind of it seemed like two things would happen. Either they were tired and ready to go home, so they got on the bus, and it was kind of quiet. That wasn't the norm. Normally, they were all jazzed up because they were getting out of school and they were going to do something else, so they were noisy as heck, and you couldn't wait to get to your first two or three stops to whittle down the numbers a little bit so it'd be a little quieter. Yeah, that was a fun job. But anyway, so here in Oregon, yeah, they're having a hard time getting enough bus drivers to drive buses. Hi, Java. Java DR2. Good to see you and Beth in the chat room. It's kind of a, hey, you know what? Maybe everybody's checking out college football today. What else is going on today sports-wise? Oh, yeah, NASCAR, they just finished. I know baseball's on. Football, you know, NFL's tomorrow. Don't think there's any games today. But, yeah. All right, what next? I was kind of waiting. I asked the grandkids to come in and be on the show today, so I may have to signal them somehow, but I can't do that while I'm on the air. That's what I need next. Maybe I need one of those air horns, right? That'd be fun. Just blast an air horn. You know, like those Z100 shows? Is that a thing? Was Z100 everywhere? I kind of get the feeling it was, because everybody always talks about Z100, whether they were, like, we had a Z100 here in Portland, but when I go to other parts of the country, or when I did, people would always, you'd always hear people talk about Z100, like, and that was the wacky ones in the morning. Oh, I did want to talk about this. This is a couple weeks old, you know. I think pretty much all my notes this week are a couple weeks old, well, except what I talked about so far, because I just didn't get the stuff cleared off fast enough. So here we are. This is no scientific data for masks on kids. It's more of a political reason, and here's why. National Institute of Health Director Francis Collins on Tuesday indicated, now Tuesday, this was not last Tuesday, but the Tuesday before, indicated that the push to make America's youngest students wear masks at school is more due to concerns over potential school closure rather than based on data. You know, science. Collins said that although young children getting COVID-19 is rare, unmasked students could cause COVID-19 outbreaks at schools, forcing their peers to return to remote learning. Remember, it's very rare that kids get sick and actually die of COVID. It's still pretty rare, but it's not zero, and we now have more than 400 kids that have died of this. So we have to think about that, Collins said. Hewitt, who is somebody else they interviewed, who was unimpressed with Collins' use of the word may, notes that K through third grade students are vulnerable to speech development problems that affect the rest of their lives if they can't see people's full faces. He then moved to ask whether there is data showing that kids in grades K through third are at greater risk of hospitalization or illness of serious sort from taking their mask off. I wish we had that data, Collins replied. God, I mean, wouldn't you expect that the director of the National Institute of Health would have some data on, you know, whether, you know, what did this person ask? If our K through third grade kids are at greater risk of hospitalization or illness of serious sort from taking their mask off. They don't have that data, but they're making policy decisions based on the possibility that the schools would shut down. The possibility that the schools were shut down mainly because the teachers' unions didn't want to go back to school. I mean, they were making money sitting at home doing nothing. Or remote teaching, I guess. That had to have been tough. Yeah. Anyway, the CDC really hates to have to make recommendations based on anecdotes, Collins said. But sometimes it's what you've got at the time. And yes, I'll have a link to the source material in the show notes, as always. We all know that this was a bioweapon or psyop created for us all. What else do we have? Oh, yeah, the FDA. Oh, the FDA people stepping down. FDA leaders stepping down, and why? This bombshell announcement comes at a particularly crucial moment as boosters and children shots are being weighed by the regulator. The departures also come as the administration has recently jumped ahead of the FDA's reviews of booster shots, announcing that they might be available by the week of September 20th. A former senior FDA leader told Endpoints that, Endpoints is where I got this story, that they're departing because they're frustrated the CDC and their ACIP committee are involved in decisions that they think should be up to the FDA. How about that? The former FDAer also said he's heard they're upset with CBER, don't know who that is, Director Peter Marks, for not insisting that those decisions should be kept inside the FDA. What finally did it for them was the White House getting ahead of FDA on booster shots. They basically said, nope, you're not putting my name on it. And you know, another thought I had today, and luckily you guys kind of help educate me and kind of keep me thinking freshly, I think, or trying to see things in a different light. And I was thinking today, you know, there isn't a right and wrong side of politicians on this. They all have played the exact same part, especially those elected officials in D.C. You know, none of them are standing up, and except for Rand Paul, as far as I can say, see. You know, I mean, if you were thinking one political party or the other was going to save our asses right now, they would be banded together doing something. But you know what? They're all just like deer caught in the headlights, blindly following what this administration is putting out there. You know, they may act like or say something that, you know, well, we're not going to do this, or, you know, but I don't really hear that much at all, except from Rand Paul, as a matter of fact. Yeah, so they're not going to save us. They're not really doing anything. And it all started before this administration even got elected. You know, it started with Trump. And you know, some people, I see these people in different I was going to say chat rooms, but this is the only chat room I hang out in. But I see replies, maybe on Twitter. On Twitter you'll see some, you know, people talking about how great Trump is and Trump is our president and all that. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, Trump actually started this. Now, maybe he wasn't like as adamant about everybody getting the jab, but this didn't start with the current administration. You know, and in my opinion, neither side is going to fix the tyranny that's going on right now. I mean, yeah, I am looking forward to another election cycle. I'm not going to participate in it because I'm done with that. It's stupid for me anymore to participate in it. And I should have called it off about 20 years ago when I thought about it the first time. But no, maybe a little stubborn, hanging out, doing the same thing I always did. You know, I was going to talk about 9/11 today. And not 9/11 what happened, but 9/11 how it affected my life. Because it had a huge effect on my life, but in a very different way than maybe anybody would think. And there's just not enough time, 15 minutes left, for me to do what I wanted to do. But someday I'm going to do it, mainly because it wasn't about 9/11. It was about me, Doc Mike. It was about what I was doing in my life at the time and kind of doing a kind of a self-evaluation thing. So someday I'll do it just kind of for fun, but it certainly doesn't have to be done today, that's for sure. But I think it's interesting. Because on the day we reflect on it, I mean, I remember exactly what I was doing at the time. I have a reason why it affected me at the time. I was actually undergoing pilot training, private pilot training at the time. And when I heard that a plane flew into one of the World Trade Centers, I was like, yeah, there's no reason that should have happened. And that was when the first one hit. And when the second one hit, I was like, oh, there's something going on. But mainly because I was training to be a pilot, and I didn't have to be training to be a pilot. Probably a lot of people, like when they saw one plane hit one of the towers, they were like, yeah, that was an accident. Anyway, someday I will kind of talk about that. But it's not going to be today. Okay, ivermectin. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. Let's see. Yeah, let's talk about this guy. It says the FDA disseminates dangerous and libelous information against life-saving COVID treatment. Dr. Malloy James, an ICU doctor from St. Louis who has also worked and volunteered in New York City ICUs during the peak of the crisis, told me that she even sees miraculous results from ivermectin during late stages of the virus. It's rare I can prescribe it in the ICU, but I have been able to and seen it miraculously work. I had a patient 10 days into standard treatment and at risk for intubation when I changed his treatment to the Math Plus protocol, and within 48 hours he was almost off oxygen. In the hundreds of ICU and vented patients I've seen, not one has improved that quickly without ivermectin in the protocol. To the extent that there might be some, let me just stop and say, so this guy that I was talking about before, I just wanted to make it clear the three things that he treated all COVID patients with. I'm pretty sure it was all, but they were truly COVID patients, well, COVID, air quotes, patients with, with symptoms, like with real symptoms, whatever COVID causes, you know, runny nose, fever, shortness of breath, you know, the whole thing. And he treated them with the things you would think you would treat these symptoms with. For example, he treated them with an anticoagulant because people develop blood clots. I mean, we've heard of those cases of people who develop blood clots even after getting the vaccine or the jab. They develop blood clots, but with COVID, sometimes people develop blood clots. He would give them a steroid, and I'm not 100% sure why he would give them a steroid, but I will give you my personal experience with giving people steroids. So I used to, in my implant denture clinic, patients who were coming in to get like extensive work done, like having all their remaining teeth extracted and having implants placed, I would give them a steroid for 3 days, and I would start the day that they were coming in to get the treatment, and I'll tell you why. It's the craziest thing. Now, this is mainly it reduced inflammation, which is the great reason to use it. It would reduce postoperative swelling, which also reduced postoperative pain, but also it just made people feel good. So they kind of came in feeling better. Like I had so many elderly patients tell me, you know, this is like the best I've felt in a while. You know, on the day they're coming in to get their remaining teeth extracted and have implants placed, they tell me it's the best they've felt in a while. So part of the thing is, you know, that the steroids used to reduce inflammation, reduce swelling. Probably it would help with breathing a little bit, but so this guy treated with anticoagulant to prevent blood clots, the steroid for whatever reason, not 100% sure, but more than likely to prevent swelling or to reduce inflammation and make you feel a little better. And then he used ivermectin because it did whatever it does to interfere with this COVID thing, disease. And that protocol is kind of, he made it sound like that was his standard protocol. And in some cases, people suffered for like 4 days. Now, again, I go back to what I was saying last week about whether or not you really know if those people had COVID or if they had the flu. You know, whether COVID exists or not, it's still kind of up in the air for me. But this guy would write or use this protocol on patients that were COVID, air quote, positive with symptoms. And in some cases, he reduced their whatever suffering to 4 days, which was which I think is pretty amazing. I mean, hell, I'd like to have the, if I get the flu, I'd like to be over the flu in 4 days. It usually seems like it takes me a day to figure out I have the flu and another day to actually start doing something about it. And then it's like 5 days or something before you really recover if it's a really nasty bug. But luckily I haven't had any of that for, a few years. Knock on wood. Okay, good. Oh, yeah. I wanted to get through that story. Dang it. Yeah, it's rare I can prescribe it in the ICU, but I've been able to and seen it miraculously work. Oh, yeah, I went through all that part. To the extent that there might be some people messing around with the paste version of ivermectin for animals, that is the fault of the FDA for making it so hard for doctors to prescribe and people to access the version made for people. It's not like the organization is offering any other solutions. If anything, this is an argument for making human ivermectin available over the counter, as it essentially was in Africa. I put a comment in here, but I can't read it because I forgot why I put it in. I'm sorry. William C. Campbell and Satoshi Omura were awarded, oh yeah, this is why. Now, I think the Nobel Prizes are mostly a bunch of crap, but you have got to hate it when one of those awards comes back to bite you in the butt. And this is what that refers to. William C. Campbell and Satoshi Omura were awarded the Nobel Prize for Physiology in 2015 for discovering the drug as a cure for river blindness. Here's an excerpt from the press release of the Nobel Assembly. Today, the ivermectin derivative, ivermectin, is used in all parts of the world that are plagued by parasitic diseases. Ivermectin is highly effective against a range of parasites, has limited side effects, and is freely available across the globe. The importance of ivermectin for improving the health and well-being of millions of individuals with river blindness and lymphatic filariasis, primarily in the poorest regions of the world, is measurable. Treatment is so successful that these diseases are on the verge of eradication, which would be a major feat in medical history of humankind. Yeah, take that on your, ivermectin argument. And also, then there was that one story, I just have a couple minutes left, the one story about this whole fake story about, that I'll just read it. The meat of the story is a series of quotes from an Oklahoma doctor, Jason Mekelia, who appears to attribute overcrowding at local hospitals to a deluge of ivermectin overdoses. He said the ERs are so backed up that gunshot victims were having hard times getting to facilities where they can get definitive care and be treated. And he told that to KFOR's Caitlin Ogle, who reported the story. It was a story that appeared to confirm many of the mainstream media's biases about the recklessness of the rubes. But it's extremely misleading. There is, in fact, little reason to believe a purported strain on Oklahoma hospitals is caused by ivermectin overdoses. One hospital served by the doctor quoted in KFOR article released a statement saying it has not treated any ivermectin overdoses, nor has it been forced to turn away patients. So I don't know why this guy came out and said what he said, but he's an idiot. And yet, this is another example of the mainstream media lazily circulating a narrative that flatters the worldwide, that flatters the worldview of liberal audience without bothering to check on any of the details. Additional reporting was sorely needed here and has now completely undermined the central point of the story. So I think that's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks, you guys, for following, hanging out with me. And I look forward to seeing you guys, oh, who knows, either Tuesday or next Saturday. We'll see how it goes. But thanks a lot.